Let's get started with Zach Wise. He's the senior national correspondent with National Journal. We've had Zach on the show before. He has a great new piece that just came out entitled Rumbling of Black Voters' Discontent Simmers Beneath the DNC's Surface. And so we're really excited to welcome Zach in to talk about this really fascinating block of voters and the piece that you just put out. Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michelle.
I always love when you're on the show, not because I think you're brilliant and I always love to talk, but I know our listeners like me love to listen to your accent, so thank you.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, there you go. It's you and me, and neither of us are from the South. They can quickly identify that. You can follow Zach on Twitter at Zach, Z-A-C underscore Wise, W-E-I-S-Z. You had this great piece that came out September 3rd, earlier this week, about kind of this interesting, and you're focusing on some Chicago voters, but tell our listeners a little bit about the article, what you're hearing and seeing in the black voter base, a base that for so long the Democratic Party has absolutely, they've just done so incredibly well in this group. But you started to see some changes in 16 with Trump, started to see more changes in 2020. It's a critical voting block, especially in key swing states. How do you see this voting block going? Do you think Donald Trump has an opportunity to really set the record with the number of black voters voting for a Republican presidential nominee?
Yeah, I definitely a record in this century. I don't know how far we can go back here, because obviously there was a lot of realignment in the 60s. But I'll say this, I don't think those polls that show Trump garnering 20% of the vote, I don't think that those are inaccurate necessarily. I think, you know, I'm cautious with polls, but I also think if they match some of the things that someone might be hearing, and I definitely think there's some real value to them. And I think that's what I heard when I went to a barbershop in Chicago, Ron Fields' barbershop. And for those seriously eagle-eyed political observers, it's the same barbershop that Vivek Ramaswamy went to last year on the south side of Chicago. Now, I don't think that Illinois is going to vote for Trump. I don't think we're at that stage yet. But clearly, the black vote is hugely important. It's hugely important in North Carolina. It's hugely important in Virginia, if either of those states are still in play. And it's definitely a huge deal in Georgia, which is now one of the key swing states. So I clearly think this is really, really important. And what I heard from Ron Fields, this barbershop owner, is a lot of concern with the way the government is spending its money, a lot of criticism about the Democratic Party and what it's doing for black voters, and maybe the little hint that it's taking black votes for granted. I think what he was saying, it does speak to a larger trend. Now, can Trump turn that into votes then? That is a big question. It's one thing for people to be flirting with voting for Trump. It's another thing for them to actually show up and put the X next to his name on election day. So I think that's the challenge for him right now. I don't always think I mean, you speak to Republicans, they'll feel that he hasn't, you know, thrown a perfect game, so to speak, when it has come to courting black voters. I think he's made some mistakes along the way, but clearly some of his policy messaging is working with them. It's just a question of whether they will actually eventually turn on election day.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting because we look at, one of the things around polling, when we look at the issues being polled, the economy is exponentially leading the way. You know, recent polls are showing in even like the southern, that Sun Belt area, Arizona, Nevada, 41% of those polled, the economy is number one, right? Immigration is next, but it's like a double digit difference. It's something, you know, like a 22% difference. But obviously, when you look at gas up 40%, consumer prices up 19%, groceries up 20%, electricity up 28%, rent up 21%, credit card debt. We're living in kind of uncharted water as we look at credit card debt. It's up at an all-time national high, up 44%. People are having to put their groceries and their gas on credit cards because under the failed policies of Bidenomics, it's costing people $12,000 more a year for the same goods and services as it did under Donald Trump. And you look at minority communities And inflation is a tax on the poor and the working poor in a way that is absolutely devastating to their communities. And I think that's probably much of what we're hearing with these rumblings and simmerings in Black and brown communities that wouldn't necessarily lean Republican at all, but the economic policies of one administration versus another. They've got two tested policies. It's not someone pontificating. They lived under Trump. They're living under Bidenomics. The differences are unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that is the main thing, Michelle. You're completely right. This is not a time when necessarily voters are just thinking about, you know, who's going to be best for my community necessarily. They're just thinking about their pocket. I mean, this is literally a quote from the barbershop owner. He literally said people care about their pocket. And that's the main thing. You know, yes, people, of course they care about racism. Of course that's an issue for Black voters. But it's also true that they want to be able to pay their bills. It's a similar thing we're seeing with Latino voters. You'd think maybe that their biggest issue would be immigration. But actually, just like it is for everyone else, the economy is the top issue. I think even Kamala Harris, her campaign has kind of acknowledged this. So I think you're absolutely right, Michelle. The economy, as it always is the most important. But I don't think that changes based on which demographic group you're talking to. I think it's always important for voters, no matter who they are.
Right. I mean, it is. I was so delighted today when I put gas in my car because I had earned a 70-cent per gallon discount from my grocery store shopping. And I was like, oh, my gosh, $2.35 I ended up paying for, you know, a gallon. But my goodness, I mean, I remember the days of $1.35 and when that same grocery card discount would have got me below a buck under Donald Trump. It's so different, and it's interesting to watch. I think what's fascinating, and I love the article, again, we're talking with Zach Wise, senior national correspondent for National Journal. Follow him on Twitter at Zach, Z-A-C underscore Wise, W-E-I-S-Z. He's got a great new piece out, came out on the 3rd of September, hanging out in a barbershop in Chicago. And I know what I think is interesting when you're in places like, you know, barbershops and hair salons and the grocery store and kind of talking to people, right, about they're very relaxed. People are really comfortable to share things with you. You look at a city like Chicago and, you know, the murder capital of the United States, you know, weekend, every weekend, you know, 100 people shot. I mean, the statistics are staggering. People are seeing crime and discontent in our cities at levels we've never seen before. I think that comes back and it ties back to the economy. When people feel and are living in plight with no hope to break the cycle of poverty, you see these spikes in crime and you're seeing them in places like Chicago, Atlanta. We're seeing them in Charlotte here in North Carolina. You're seeing them in Philadelphia, places that, you know, New York City, places that beautiful cities in our country where people are afraid to go visit. And the people who are there living in fear. And it is, I think, comes right back to it's the economy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we'll start this by saying I think Chicago is a great city.
Oh, I love it. It's a great city.
I absolutely love it. Moving on from that, it's definitely interesting going through the city. You know, the barbershop where you go right all the way downtown. I was there during the DNC. Just because there was all this hullabaloo and all this kind of commotion going on, shall we say, around the actual convention, and then you go south, and it's a different story. It's just a regular day, and you see the changes in the community, and yeah, I think there's obviously a lot of people struggling. Crime is one of those things. I mean, it's gone up and then it's gone down, but it's obviously something that's still very high. Period. You know, it doesn't matter what the situation is, and I think it's something that concerns people. Everybody I speak to, regular folks who have no interest in politics in their day-to-day, crime is an issue for them, and they don't want to be living with it. I think you're right, and yes, as you say, the economy, all these things are so relevant for voters, and especially for people who aren't, you know, as engaged as you are, Michelle. You know everything about going on day to day, but there's plenty of people who, you know, they only get involved in politics once every 4 years, and for them, a lot of them, even if they're doing well in their job, they still want to live in a safe community. And I think that that's definitely something that's going to be relevant come election day. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about next week. We've got the debate upcoming. It looks like this will probably be the only debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump.
Right.
You know, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. Donald Trump did a town hall last night on Fox with Sean Hannity. He's done 35 plus interviews. Right now, he's talking at the Economic Club of New York about his economic policies, taking questions. Kamala Harris has done one interview, and I'm using that term very loosely, with her running mate on CNN. Not much meat on the bone, as many of us would say, as you look at that interview. And Trump will just, you know, take questions all day. I mean, he loves it. I think love him or hate him, Donald Trump has never met a microphone that he didn't love. I mean, he will stand at the podium and take them all day long. But one of the things that you and I were sharing in before the show is, you know, Donald Trump didn't mince words about ABC, who's hosting this, and the relationship between, the president of the network and Kamala Harris and her husband. And I jokingly said, gosh, do you think they're all going to go on a double date when this debate is over? Because, you know, it's fascinating to watch this all play out. But I think, you know, they're going to be on the debate stage next week. How do you think it looks? What do you expect to see? What does Trump need to do to make sure that he comes out on top? And what does she need to do to make sure she does? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, whatever Kamala Harris's relationship with these network heads, I think ultimately the voters just care what's being said, and they will have the same questions. It was strange with Trump. He went after two people that ABC have, who neither of whom are going to be on the debate, namely George Stephanopoulos and Donna Brazile. Donna Brazile was the former DNC chair. So it seemed that the actual host will be David Neuer and Lindsay Davis. I'm not exactly sure what he was trying to do there, Trump, but clearly he's just he's doing some expectation setting, maybe. I think he's in a slightly tough situation because basically Harris, almost her sort of leveler, her kind of baseline is Biden. And we all know how that debate went. I mean, he was awful. And so in a way, Harris only has to beat his performance. And that leaves Trump basically trying to find a way to improve upon what he's already done. On the other hand, what Trump has is and you've alluded to this already, Harris has flip-flopped a lot on her positions, and she still really hasn't come up with a way to succinctly answer that in a way that's clear. I mean, she said in that interview that you mentioned that she had with CNN that she hasn't changed her values. Yet it doesn't feel like it's enough. So it'd be interesting to see how Trump kind of prosecutes, if you will, that part of Harris's record, the fact that she has changed her positions on certain things. I think that'll be interesting for him. The other thing is he's got a bit more experience here. You know, he's got much experience with debate. He's got experience recently with a debate, that one against Biden. The last time Harris debated was against Mike Pence 4 years ago. So she's a little bit out of the game. So it'll be interesting to see if she struggles to get out the gates quickly. But it's also a slightly strange atmosphere because there's no audience, there's muted mics. You know, you could really get lost in your own answer there. So it'll definitely be interesting to see what goes on. I think both candidates will basically just will want to avoid disaster. Debates can really matter. We saw that with the last debate, but they can also be kind of uneventful. And that has happened with previous debates that follow a big first one, so to speak. So I think it will definitely be interesting to see what happens, of course, but I reckon that both candidates will be a little bit cautious.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always the advice, you know, that consultants give them going in, like, just don't fumble, right? One of the things that I think will be interesting to watch, and you know what I'll be watching for in it, is can Trump stay between the mayonnaise and the mustard? You know, that's kind of always it's like when you teach your kids how to drive. If Trump can stay on message and deliver on policy and define her based on her record, I think he wins. If he gets mired down it starts to feel personal and he goes off script sometimes, I think it becomes very challenging for him because, you know, I've got to believe her debate prep, which, you know, he does debate prep every day. Like right now, you know, he's been talking for an hour at the Economic Club of New York, and he just does this, right? No teleprompter, he just kind of goes. He and that works well sometimes and not so well other times. But, you know, she's in full debate prep, going to camp mode. And to your point, she hasn't been on the debate stage in 4 years. And debating Donald Trump is a whole lot different than debating Mike Pence.
Yeah. I mean, she's barely been, I think there was a story recently that she's been in the same room as Trump once, which it seems shocking to believe, but it will definitely be a new experience for her. I think it will be fascinating to see how she adapts to that forum. The debate is very much something that Harris will feel that she doesn't necessarily need to win the debate outright or hugely. I think you look at her, she's not striking a campaign necessarily that feels like it's in a bad state. I think she's enjoying this polling bounce that she's received recently. She's not trying to rock the boat with many interviews, as you alluded to. She's literally had one sit-down interview since coming into the race. But I think she feels fairly comfortable. I think, as you say with Trump, maybe he might feel that he's going to go after her, not just on policy, but maybe personally. It'll be interesting to see if she tries to goad him or not. But as you say, I think it'll be, if he can stick to those topics about the economy, it's going to be really tough for her. If he can stick to those topics about, you know, about her changing her positions, that's going to be tough for her. So I think, yeah, as you say, I think his discipline will be crucial to whether he wins this debate.
Yeah, and it's interesting to watch what she's been doing as well. She was doing it kind of pre the DNC. You got to see it firsthand there in Chicago. We've really seen it in this honeymoon stage, although I have to say I think kind of the bloom is coming off this a bit. She's running like Donald Trump is the incumbent, talking about what she's going to do on day one and you know, the things that she's going to do to help working class families. And, you know, it's amazing to me because, you know, day one was 1,360-ish days ago for Kamala Harris. She's the sitting vice president of the United States. She cast the tie-breaking vote that sent us into this recession. I mean, she was the last one in the room with the debacle and devastation leaving Afghanistan. She has locked herself in so many ways. And this is why I think this Trump ad, where it's Kamala debating Kamala, it's the best ad that I think Trump's got going. But you can't say I'm the last one in the room and try to act and be completely locked in with Joe Biden's policies for the last 3.5 years and now try to run like he's the incumbent and you're kind of new onto the stage. But my gosh, I feel like the mainstream media is letting her get away with that messaging at every turn.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating, this aspect for Harris. And I've written about it a couple of times about whether or not she's going to fully embrace Biden. Because if she doesn't, and it's like she's, as you say, it's like she's attacking her own policies. But if she leans in with him fully and fully embraces him, like, what's her own policy identity? What does she stand for? I think that is something that is difficult for the electorate. I think there are two sort of results of that. First of all, it's hard to define her. It's hard for voters to really figure out who she is. But it also makes it kind of challenging for Republicans at times to define her. Like, oh, Trump's obviously trying to paint her out as some sort of left-wing extremist, which is, you know, a classic tactic. On the other hand, her supporters might point to the fact that she was a prosecutor. She's you know, put several criminals in jail, and we spoke about crime being an issue. So it's really hard to figure out who is Kamala Harris. That's something, and I think that's where this debate becomes really big. This is a big stage for her, and she's going to be questioned. Like, she doesn't get to give some summit speech like she did at the DNC. There's going to be millions of people watching at home, a huge audience, a much bigger audience than what she's used to, and there's going to be someone at the other end who's prosecuting her record, namely Trump. So it'll be interesting to see how she handles that. But yeah, I mean, obviously she won't be trying to rock the boat, but this is still an important event.
Yeah, and Tulsi Gabbard, who really took her to task on the Democratic presidential primary debate stage, and she ended up dropping out not too long after that debate. Tulsi Gabbard, who has come out in full support of Donald Trump, is helping him with debate prep, which I think is fantastic. So it'll be interesting to watch. Zach Wise, senior national correspondent, National Journal. Follow him on Twitter at Zach Wise, which is ZAC_Wise. As we wrap up, just kind of last minute here, you have been putting out a couple things about the DNC chair, Jamie Harrison, talking about Florida possibly being a swing state. I'm kind of chuckling as I'm looking at it. But tell our listeners a little bit about why none of us can really take this seriously, because I think it is, like you, a bit comedic.
Yeah, I'm rolling my eyes. I mean, even Democrats say that Florida is out of play. It's wish casting. It's not going to happen. Jamie Harrison is basically trying to say that Florida's still in play. I don't even think the Harris campaign is putting money in adverts in Florida. Whether they like it or not, there are now 1 million more registered Republicans in the state of Florida. Back in the day, 20 years ago, it used to be the other way around, and it was still a swing state then. So if the script is flipped on that in terms of registered voters, you can imagine how big the margins will be come November this year. And I don't seriously think it's in play. I'm not exactly sure what Harrison's trying to do. Maybe he's trying to force Republicans to spend some money there. The reality is that will be in the red column. I think it seems like if he's really wanting to spend his time elsewhere, it might be better. His time may be better spent elsewhere. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Maybe head to New Hampshire. It's kind of crazy to think so many, elections ago, 20 years ago or so, not even that long, we were all waiting, bated breath, watching the news on Ohio and Florida, right? Because they always kind of decided. And now Ohio and Florida are the first ones called and always in the red column. So it's good to see that. And, of course, much to cover as we enter into the last kind of 60 days here. We're at the week after Labor Day, and it's full election season and college football. So can't get better than that, Zach. I love both of them, and I'm glad that we're able to talk much about it with you here on the show. Zach Wise, senior national correspondent for National Journal. Follow him on Twitter at Zach Wise, at Zach_Wise. Zach, thanks so much for joining us. A great piece on black voters' discontent beneath the DNC surface. You can read it on his Twitter page. Thanks a bunch for joining us.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Take care.